This is the If More, Let's Divide podcast.
Welcome to the If More, Let's Divide podcast. And Charlie, guys, before we start this episode, you guys, you know the normal drill. Subscribe, tell someone. We are everywhere on your Twitters, on your Instagrams, on YouTube, like basically Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere. So Charlie, you for leave review if you won't even follow, Charlie. For give us some review, you know. And also shout out to Atunua Digital for working with us on season 6. Fred, what's popping?
Buyaka.
What the
hell? We're in the house, B.
Yeah. It look like today episode will be lively.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Lively. Active. Yeah. Active. Very, very active. Because I can't enter pockets. Because me, I don't go out nowadays. My last time I went out, my childhood friend was in Ghana, went to, I think, Honeysuckle or something. And that was the last time. Went to ETM, came back home. I'm done with, you know, nightlife. Yeah. But it looks like I see what's going on in town through the eyes of people, you know, people who share. And for me, I'm so, you know, looking forward to this episode because one of those eyes, one of them eyes, one of them, one of them ISIS, one of them ISIS. Yeah.
ISIS, they still be active.
Nah, the defunct.
Charlie.
Charlie, guys, this episode is about, you know, entertainment. It's about not just nightlife, but a culture, a movement that is popping off. They are in charge, they are in control, and we are happy to have their lead in the house to come and break it down with us, to come and divide things for us. And Chai, without further ado, help us welcome Joey, the founder and the creative director of Black Volta.
Buyaka, buyaka, buyaka.
Gunshot in the ear, gunshot in the ear. Yeah. Charlie Joey.
What's up?
I see you at places, but it's been a while, it's been a minute. But for a long time, for years,
yeah,
I was seeing you at different places, right?
Yep, yep. I think we've met a couple of times.
Yeah. But back then, I think those days, you were not doing Black Volta things.
Yeah.
Were you doing something else
before
Black Volta?
So thank you so much for having me on the podcast, and I really appreciate
the
fact that you guys are one of the podcasts I actively listen to, even though we have a podcast.
We will definitely talk about that.
But anyways, my name is Joey, creative director, founder of Black Volta. So as you mentioned, I think we've met in a couple of spaces and then within the entertainment industry. But yes, I've been in corporate for about a decade.
Oh, wow.
Bit of a decade and some time. I'm a chartered HR professional. So I've been in corporate for all of like 10, 11 years. So all those times.
9 to 5.
Charlie. So between oil and gas, power,
HIA. You were raking in.
Yes. So I've always been in corporate. I think at the times where you saw me, and I think right after COVID was when I decided to. I've always been going out anyways, but it was only after COVID that I decided to merge both corporate and Black Volta together. So that's to answer your question.
So before Fred comes in, so do you still do your corporate thing?
No. So I started off with Black Volta because I was working for GE, General Electric.
Oh, okay.
So I handled HR strategy for Africa, and I was doing it side by side. GE didn't have a structured, because it was an American company, they don't have a structured 9 to 5. Our offices were in Stanbic Heights. The offices are open 24 hours. So because we had teams, my boss was in the UK, my other team members were in Paris, South Africa, and in the US. So it's not based on time, it's based on delivery. At midnight, you can go to work. At one, you can go to work.
Flexibility.
So, yes, they were very, very flexible work culture. So that afforded me the time to actually do Black Volta also on the side.
Dope.
What is good, Joey?
I'm good. I'm great.
Charlie. I'm coming in from the blind. I've seen your brand, but I'm not really an entertainment guy like that in terms of the nightlife and all of that. So my curiosity now, you giving us the background of coming from corporate, working for G is a big deal. You know, anybody that knows anything about corporations, G is one of the largest corporations that's been standing for a long time.
Yeah.
What was it that brought you from that world to what you do now?
So I'd say it didn't necessarily bring me into that part. I think I've been a creative for a very long, for a very large part of my life.
Okay.
It's been, creativity has been a long-standing part of even my corporate life.
Okay.
But I've always been intrigued by nightlife, right? Nightlife specific. I've always been intrigued. Not necessarily the partying, the jumping around, the bottles, the women stuff, but the actual social part of the nightlife, like the conversations that happen. I realized that in corporate, during the daytime, Charlie, everybody is just being the corporate guy, you understand? We are using big jargons that we don't even understand, trying to wing, trying to form an angle. But in the evenings, we all go to the bar and then we all realize, Charlie, we fuck up. In that particular sense, you get me? So in the night is where I feel like most people have their most honest conversations. And I always say that I think God blessed me with a beautiful eye. So I've been documenting my journey. I have a video or a picture of my life every day for the past 7 years.
Come on, please.
Every single day I have a picture of something that happened in my life. I document, that's how I am. I'm a hoard. I document my life.
How do you back up? How do you save?
So that's how Black Volta essentially came up, right?
Wow.
So I wanted to put my life out there. So Black Volta, in as much as you guys see it, is actually me living my life, right? So
it's essentially, never saw it.
Yeah. So it's essentially me coming to the places that I go to, hanging out the places that I go to, and then just putting it. On a particular
So
platform.
Wait, let me break this down. So Black Volta, even though it's now a brand, a solid brand, it's basically a guy or someone going out. Okay, let me see. Someone who loves to party or someone who loves to go out to events. Going out and just sharing what is happening at that event.
It's right.
That's basically it.
Basic, if you want to explain it to a five-year-old, that's
crazy. Then the branding or how you started, even though it was subtle, was crazy.
Yeah.
Because the events that you started with were not just any Ifritchie party, then you go and you started with some top tier stuff.
So I think what helped me was, personally, I believe I have a lot of social currency, right? So growing up, the schools I went to, the friends that I...
What schools?
Okay, well, I went to, I studied outside. I studied outside in the US and Australia. High school-wise, I went to Presec, Lagos, and I went to...
Yawa school,
I went to Presec, Lagos, and I went to University of
Ghana. Accra can be the best.
Let me get up this podcast right now. Yeah, but University of Ghana, then I studied law, University of London. But then my core group of friends were... I've always either been in entertainment. And so if you realize, most of the events and most of the owners that I currently deal with is either I went to school with them, or we have some form of connection, right? So it's virtually, it's kind of very easy for me. You get what I'm saying? Let me give you a typical example. So I started off Black Water. I think our very first client was Alibaba. Now the owners of Alibaba, Kwesi Osekwesi, and then Kojo Bakna. Shout out to them. They're doing amazing stuff. We started off with Alibaba. Now they have 6 businesses across the world, right? These guys worked with me in GE, General Electric. I was their HR manager, right? So imagine me, they setting up a business for hospitality and focusing on operations and revenue generation. and you have someone that comes in with an eye for content. And I go like, okay, you know what? We are in this content era right now. You focus on revenue generation and operations. Let me create the content for you. Let me do photography. Let me do whatever it is. But at the same time, I'm chilling with you every single day. Get me? So that's it. It's that, just to say that it was just very easy for me to just fit in because of the social currency I had.
I want us to stay, you know, around here for a while, right? So, Freddie, be serious, too. Because, like, you were able to identify, one, what you love, what you enjoy doing, and made something out of it. And that isn't work. Because it is something that you, that is you, right? And if it's bringing in money now, it won't be that, oh, I'm going to work again. Oh, I'm tired. Because that is you. For taking pictures, a picture a day, or even more than one picture a day for 7 years without missing a day, it's crazy. You could have used those pictures or videos for something else, right? Did you see a gap in what you are doing now before you tapped in? And I'm asking you this question. Maybe let me join two questions. Because over 10 years ago, like 15 years ago, we had Talk of GH. I don't know if you remember Talk of GH.
I remember.
They were going to events and back then, video wasn't that, you know, crazy. So pictures, like every, you know, Sunday morning or Monday morning, Talk of GH Facebook page was our spot because maybe an event had happened on Saturday and, you know, they would come and report, show pictures and all that. But this is like times two, right? So how did you identify, aside it being something you love, how did you identify this gap? To tap in? Was it because no one was doing it or you were like, child, let me just do me and...
Okay, so I don't know if you guys have, any of you have your phones with you?
Yeah.
If you can Google top 10 nightlife spots in Accra.
Nightlife spots
in Accra. Just Google it.
Okay, let's Google.
And then give
Fred,
me...
will you do it?
Okay,
do it.
And then, I don't know, any of the pages, you can just click and then just mention the top 10 spots that they mentioned.
Top
I feel 10. Like you guys are the best people to do this.
Yeah. Why?
Because top of the 10. Yeah. Nightlife spots in Ghana or in Ghana. And then just read out what it says.
In Ghana or in Accra?
Any of them.
Okay, so top 10.
What does it say?
Should I mention the list?
Yeah, any
Fred,
you
want to
go? Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay, it gave me a list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so Luna Rooftop Bar, Kruna, Twist, Mood Bar, The Woods, Mad Club, Front Back, you know, on the Rocks Bar, I don't know, the Area Bar, you know, so it goes on and on and on.
So essentially what I want you guys to just understand, I think this has been updated, but... If you look at the top 10 searches that come out and you list them, 50% of those locations do not exist anymore. My point is they do not exist anymore. Yeah. So imagine you are not in this particular country and you want data about entertainment and nightlife within Accra and Ghana. It's not a real true reflection of what is on the ground. So that was one for me, right? So more around... Why isn't there a lot of data around nightlife? Like, why aren't we just speaking about the good, like the creatives that are happening, the sports, the culture? You get, we don't have that particular information online. So I was like, okay, you know, why don't I just create a particular page where, you know, as much as I can, we can be able to provide as much information where it is not gossip. So you mentioned things like Talk of GH and all
back
that.
Then it was,
so it was more of
okay,
this is this, you go to an event, it's like, okay, this person is at the event.
Yeah,
this guy is at the event. And then this guy
is at
the
wearing?
What is she wearing? Yeah. What is that? And for me, I believe the whole world was built on storytelling. every single thing that we know right now is built on a story someone has told you, right? So how about, if I have that gift to be able to storytell from a nightlife and entertainment perspective, to make you show you Ghana in a way where it's more appealing to you, that's essentially how Black Volta came. So events, when we started, when we are going to cover events, people typically want us to be the ones doing the media production because we do storytelling in a different way. You do your events and someone wants to, has about six sponsors, right? Someone is talking about sustainability. Someone is talking about the party. Someone is talking about this. But it's not just videography and who did this and who did that. So I think storytelling was really embedded in our content creation and our storytelling. And I think over the years, that's what a lot of brands and locations have grown up to. And then that's what they really like. I saw a post just 2 days ago on Instagram where the person mentioned that Coachella, live post, right? So our functionality was on the fact that you can be in your house and you could see what was happening in town in real time. Real time. That was our selling value proposition. So 2 days ago, I saw a video and then they said that, oh, now Coachella is now changing their approach. Back in the days, like they do their event and then all of a sudden you see one big video at the end of the event. But now at Coachella, they had almost 300 videos at Coachella. That was the first time. So people were talking about mental health. So you could see people doing mental health. You could see the parties. You could see Amare. Yeah. So it was just storytelling. But I think we just started that a bit way back as Ghanaians, and then I think now probably the world is now just catching on.
So the curious thing about you, because I asked the question the other way around, like what propelled you to go from corporate to Black Volta, but it's, your response was that you went rather the, you've always been a creative and it was always a part of you. But I'm listening to what you're describing in terms of what you do, and I'm curious about what it is exactly that you would define it as. Is it curated shows? Is it showing people the experience? And, you know, you said your first, mentioned how Alibaba was your first client. So what, in what capacity? Like, how do you, basically, for someone who doesn't know
what Black Volta,
what Black Volta is, what does it really
mean? So essentially, Black Volta, to make it simple, it's a digital media firm.
Okay.
Yeah, right. So, what you'd probably term, there's what they call right now, there's a difference between new media and then traditional media.
Yes. So, we're new media, right?
Yes. Yeah. So exactly. Media. So this is new media, right? But I've always also had a thing against that word, new media. I just feel like media just evolves. Exactly. So there's nothing like traditional media and new media. Like media came from a point of, if you're Christian, if you're familiar with the story of the Noah's Ark, where, okay, they sent a bird to find out if it was dry or not. That's dry. Media, right? Then you go on to things like the Phantom From, where they beat and then they have everybody just to announce and stuff like that, to letters, to TVs, to billboards. And then now we have podcasts. And so it just, it's not really traditional media and new media for me. It's just that media is just evolving for us. Yeah. So essentially, we are just a digital media platform. That's okay.
So like for someone who's interested in your services, what are you basically going to do to enhance the experience or the relationship? Like what do I get?
What do you get? So let me give you an example. So if I come to your, if you are opening a bar or restaurant, I think we, because of that, we've partnered with almost everybody within the ecosystem, because of the way we storytell, right? So people outside feel like, okay, so when a bar opens or a lounge opens or something like that, amplification of their content has to go beyond their platforms,
right?
Understood. So back in the day, so they go to radio stations, they go to newspapers and stuff like that, but because of the fact that consumers are now on their phones, they want another outlet to actually amplify their particular content. That's where we come in.
Understood.
So when we come in as much as we are creating content for you and then you're also using our platform to amplify your content, Maybe because of the way I've been in corporate for some time, I go a step further to become a business, like a partner to your business. Right. So, okay, if I come in and then I look at your books and I go like, okay, you know what? When we came in, let's say you're making a million CDs in revenue, and based off our content that we produced for you, you increased your revenue, your customer satisfaction by X amount. I've added value to the business.
Absolutely.
Then I can charge you for that particular service.
Oh, makes sense. Yes. Makes a ton of sense. Yeah.
Dope. So when you started, right, was it just you? And if it was, like, how many, you know, people how many people do you have in your team now?
So now, when I started, it was just me. So bought the gear, lens, a few photography or audio, and then I had one guy who joined, who was Emmanuel. He's joined right from the beginning. So everybody who has joined Blackwater has stayed with Blackwater.
Mm.
Right? So shout out to Emmanuel. He's one of our videographers. So he's head of media right now. And we've built the portfolio. I think maybe it's because of my HR background. Normally when I bring people into the organization, it's more of building you to a point where you can also create something for yourself. So for now, with Emmanuel, he heads media, but he handles the production side of whatever we do. So all production goes through his firm that he's also bringing up. Mm-hmm. But when we started, it was just me. But now, thankfully, we have about 17 employees across 3 major markets, East Africa. And then we are launching in DC in July of this year.
Wow.
So the team is full of videographers, photographers, accounts managers. We have someone who handles strategy and commercialization. Mm. We have a legal person and accounts person. So it's a full body team.
Wow.
Were you guys at Coachella this year?
No, we were not. We were not at we did Grammys and then the All-Star Weekend.
Yeah, Grammys. Okay. So how did you get the link to
the Grammys?
Yeah, yeah.
So with the Grammys, there's a brunch. Shout out to Denta. Denta of Guba. Guba. So Denta has been very instrumental with the Grammy Academy in the US. She's also been championing the fact that the Grammys come to Africa.
Africa, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, so she does a nominees brunch every single year. She did it last two years. Everybody that comes in who's nominated for the Grammys is more like a brunch to bring them all in. You get me? So when every single year she saw what we were doing as a media firm, and she realized that our scope was essentially, we have a very big diaspora following. Our following now has more US followership than Ghana followership.
Well, why?
I don't know. Maybe it's because of the type of content. And also, when you are also in the US, when you're outside, you want to know what is happening in Ghana.
Yeah, so yeah, okay.
You understand? Okay. You want to know what is happening in the country to make informed decisions. So I feel like they want to know what is happening in Africa, West Africa, from an entertainment standpoint. So she was the one who spearheaded the fact that we become media partners for her event at the Grammys, and then that linked us to be going for the Grammys every single year. So she's been the one who's been instrumental.
That's dope. That's very, very, very. And you guys, you said is this your fourth year?
Is that third year?
Third year. Dope. Yeah. That's really fast.
Yeah, you're very fast. Sometimes sometimes it goes like, you did all this.
Yeah. It's crazy. So we will come back to this, but let's talk about, for someone, for your brain, you know, for how you're able to, you know, realize opportunities and tap into them. I'm wondering the kind of upbringing that you had, you know, where you got that from. Was it from school? Was it from a parent? What kind of, you know, home did you grow up in?
That's a very deep question. Mm. Yeah, I think no one has really asked me that question. That's a good one. Mm. So I think I had a very straightforward upbringing.
No ketche.
It was my mom was a teacher. She's retired now. And then my dad is a geologist, retired geologist. I think for them, both of my parents, it was very, very open. You understand? I think initially, especially my dad, to a point, he didn't understand
What's going on?
Like, was like, why do you like hanging out every single time? Like, they always thought it was all about the partying and chilling and going out. Mm. And so it's always like, why are you always partying and going out and doing this and doing that? But I think the trust that they had in me, I wasn't I wouldn't bring problems back at home. And I think I've been very, very independent from a very young age. Mm. So I think the independence also allowed the fact that, okay, you know what, if I'm making my own money, making my own decisions, and I'm not bringing any problems to the family, okay, then probably he might be onto something. Mm. So I think as most Ghanaian parents are, until they see a publication somewhere, then you realize, okay, there's something here.
Yeah,
so I think a year and a half ago, we got nominated for the top 50 young CEOs.
Mm.
Right? And I mean, my dad is a bit old, so he won't see these things on social media. You probably hear it on radio or newspapers. So I think one time he was scrolling through and then he saw me and he was like, okay, there's something in there. Yeah, so that's when he started, I think that's when they started getting used to our
particular. So Fred, before you, so you never got any pushback from them when you were moving from maybe oil and gas or your work at GE to doing this?
When I was at the point where I was transitioning, I think it was a discussion with them.
Okay.
So it wasn't like, okay, you know, I'm leaving and stuff like that. Even the decision to actually leave corporate was thought through.
Mm, mm.
For me, it was, okay, I've worked in corporate for some time. Things I did was I calculated how, GE is a very good pay, it pays really well, especially in Ghana. And so I was like, okay, let me fast forward how much I'll make in the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just be sitting down here right now.
Mm-hmm.
Will I be happy with myself, both from a fulfillment standpoint and from a money standpoint? Will I be fulfilled knowing that this is the amount of money I've made after I've committed 3 years of my life to corporate?
Mm.
For me, it wasn't, maybe I would have made money, but I was like, okay, is this all to life, right? So mine was, okay, first of all, if I place a bet on myself, I'm working at a company that's almost 176 years. The person who initiated GE also placed a bet on himself and it's become that particular big corporate. And I think I did a lot of research around the creator economy, which was growing. It's now $3 billion in terms of market size in Africa, right?
Wow.
Growing at a compound interest of about 22%. So if I'm one of the leading, I have one of the leading brands in entertainment, which is already popping, and I'm in a country or I'm in an environment which enables these kind of people, maybe I have a more than a 50% chance of making it. So that's when I was like, you know what, let me place a bet on myself. And I think when I shared that with parents, they were cool.
So, I mean, backgrounds, I'm sure, important to what we eventually become, and I'm loving that Mutombo wanted to delve a bit into that. I'm just curious about the fact of you saying that creativity was always a part of your life.
Mm.
So in your early ages, how were you expressing that creativity?
Mm. So I think early on, I think I mentioned that I grew up in Australia and then in the US. So I think I'm sure what some of you have traveled a lot. So when you realize that the American educational system throws a lot of balls at you to a point where they realize what you typically like. So I think growing up, I've done sculpting, I've done fencing, I've done roller skating.
Fencing part.
Yeah. So I mean, they will expose you to so many things. Yeah. Then you realize that, okay, you know, like knit, like you sew and stuff like that.
Wow.
So I just realized those things were more appealing to me as opposed to. Then I came to Ghana. And then we started reading Machiavelli and.
What school were you going to reading Machiavelli in Ghana?
I read political science.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so you read Machiavelli and all these things. You get what I'm saying? So it's more like okay, that kind of education and then this kind of education. And even with the my corporate life, right, creativity has always been a part of, although HR is a bit rudimentary and monotonous, everybody that you speak to, when I'm hiring people into the organizations, I've hired CEOs and all these people, I make the firm appealing to you. Yes, you understand? I make the, I have ways in which I could storytell such that you want to work for the organization. So I think it's just been a slow, very moving path of what I've been doing, and then I just had to express it in photography. And
that came out in the form of, I want to be, because entertainment is a broad, you know, spectrum. But the question about nightlife and the conversations that happen there, like, I'm also, because usually in a founder, you find so many, I guess, of their nervous system, if you want to call it that, within their organization, because it's certain ideologies and philosophies, world views that inform how they basically create an organization for others to come and join and to perform a particular whatever function. And you're looking at entertainment, you've always been a creative, but I'm also trying to still figure out what is pulling you towards that. Like, okay, you could have been in the music industry, that's a form of entertainment. You could have been in sports and events, that's a form of entertainment. But what about your upbringing led to, nightlife is, was it like, did it ever happen in your life where you went out one day and you're like, oh shit, this kind of, you know, experience is so, it opened something in your head and you're like, ah, I got to keep doing this. Like, I'm trying to understand, you know, because it's a very curious thing to even think about the type of conversations that happen now. I've never thought about it. It's never crossed my mind. I just look at nightlife as a bunch of people who are willing to spend too much money for booze and talk to girls who likely not go home with them, and they want to get drunk off of your money and end up going home to their boyfriends. That's how I kind of like summarize nightlife. Right? But you have a different take and perspective on it. It's very interesting to me. So I wish you could maybe expand on it a little bit.
I don't know. I think it's a combination of a lot of things. Even the trajectory of where Blackwater started and where it is now and the business units that we have. I keep saying that we don't necessarily have branches like, you know, this is what we want to venture in. Based off conversations within the ecosystem, we realized that, okay, you know what? So we started off with a talent management business, right?
Okay.
Let me give you a typical example. So I love music. I have a DJ set in my house. I've never DJed before. So when we started documenting nightlife, we were like, okay. There was a lady who came. She's called Chichi DJ. She's now, we manage her now. She's the biggest female DJ. And she came to me and she was like, okay, you know what? I want to DJ.
Okay.
I want to DJ, just like that. I'm like, okay, if you want to DJ, it's fine. She's like, okay, no, I'm going to prove you wrong. She traveled outside, bought all her DJ gear, and she was like, okay, are you ready for me now? I'm like, okay, you know what, let's do something. Fast forward, we've built her to become a solid DJ within the nightlife ecosystem. Based off that, we set up a talent management business, right? To see that, okay, there was opportunity there for people who want to come into the nightlife space, but just not necessarily just come and party. You understand? Maybe there are people who actively want to do something with the fact that, like, with their lifestyle. You get what I'm saying? So I wanted my lifestyle to make sense for me. Right? I wanted everything that I do to feel like play to me, but at the same time, I'm making money off of it.
Based absolutely. On,
yes.
Absolutely.
So
makes sense. Yes.
Nightlife in Accra. The word that keeps on going around is that it's become too monotonous, one way, the same people, the same vibe. We don't have a variety. And in a way, I do understand, right? Because for me personally, I've had the opportunity of being to other, I'm afraid to you two. And if you compare what we experience when we are out there to what's going on here, it's
kind of one way, right? There isn't a variety. What is your stand on this? And also before you end, shouts to, I saw a new skate place in Accra. I don't know where it is, but that is different. Like, you know, yeah. So.
So, thanks for the question. Is nightlife monotonous in Accra? It depends on where you are standing, right? If for us or for where I sit, sometimes I'm caught between being a consumer and then being a curator, right? But to say it's monotonous, I don't think so, from where I'm standing. I think people are just, it's two things. First of all, there's a cultural element to it, right? We are Ghanaian, we are taught to essentially dream that big. If you know what I'm talking about, right? There are a lot of locations that are doing amazing. I see you mentioned skate park.
I just saw it. Yeah.
Now skate park is owned by the owners of Garage.
Okay.
Now Garage came into the system right after Bloom Bar and stuff like that, and then disrupted nightlife. Right. So what they did was, they were the ones who came into the country, and then every single week they had experiences where they changed their location. So you go into the location one day and it's Paris. There's an Eiffel Tower there. You go in there, then there's Asia. There's the Wall of China, stuff of things. There's a skate park. You get what I'm saying? There's the Accra Arts District where you can go and do batik making. You can do pottery. You can do painting. You can do, you understand what I'm saying? There are new wellness. Today, there's I think somewhere this week, there's an event where they started paddle, right? There's the paddle infused with wellness. You get what I'm saying? There are fashion events. You get what I'm saying? But what I'm saying is, I feel, and that's also one of the main reasons why we also came up with Black Water, right? Amplification, making the eyeballs see the things which are necessarily happening within the nightlife scene, informs people to actually make a lot of decisions. Right. But if you are not seeing what is happening or you don't have information, we're in a country where we have, it's the fact that we do not have information. There are so many things to do within nightlife. But because you keep going to the same locations, meeting the same people, we just feel that it's monotonous. You understand what I'm saying? Okay, when you go outside and you travel, you can essentially go through an app that will show you all the things are going on. If you travel into the, even if someone travels into their country, your cousins come. And they ask you, where, Mutombo, I want to chill tonight. What would you say? You get me?
Yeah.
You get my point of view. Yeah, my point of view is, you cannot advise people who travel and then come in and tell them that these are the four places you can actually go. Yeah. Yes, to me, feel monotonous. Yeah.
It's dope that you mentioned it, because I was about to ask two questions in one. One, you mentioned an app. I feel in Ghana, there isn't a common place where you can go to on your phone or on your laptop to find out events happening, you know, in a day a date.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all everywhere. Everybody is putting up stuff like flyers, but there isn't a common place, like one unified place where you can, maybe an app or something where you can go and you can scroll and you're seeing this, you're seeing that. Is it something that Black Volta is thinking about? And my second question is, do you guys have your own events?
Okay.
Yeah.
So the first question is, So we are launching, we are demoing our app.
Nice.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah, Charlie. We haven't used it in between conversations in a long time. Stop doing that.
We're essentially building an app, a one-stop app for nightlife and entertainment, where you can go through and then scroll through. And it's not just going to be in Accra. Right, so it's going to be user-generated information from other countries. So you can go to Lagos and then just go tap in the location and then check the events which are actually happening on that particular day. Typically, what we do in our team is we create products based, I keep telling you, we create products based on customer feedback and need. For the past 2 years, last year we created almost 180 events in Accra.
Wow.
Damn.
180 events. And these are not like, oh, like, these are events which are happening the whole of December. Yeah. So imagine some people, all these 700,000 people, 1 million people coming into the country, and they don't know what is happening. They don't know how to navigate. You understand? Last year, Dirty December, everybody was waiting for us. We actually had to create a Google Sheet of 200 events. So the locations, where to go, the times it was happening, and all that, the locations. And then people just went through. So we sat down and we went like, okay, no, this is, at least we've tested the market. It's now time for us to integrate all that into a particular app, one-stop app for people, one-stop app for where you'd have your entertainment news, where you'd have your information, where you'd have your events. We're going to have our merch page. One of our business.
I'm seeing the stunners.
Yeah, so we have an e-commerce business which has merch on there. And we are launching also our new product next month. Let me give you a backstory on that. So last year, we wanted to test the validity of our brand in Dirty December based off our followership. So what we said was we want people who travel in or who hang out in the night to go to a location and feel like they will have a Black Volta experience. So I came up with an idea where I did an access card, which had a Black Volta on it with numbers on it. So when we did, I did 100 cards. I launched it around, we launched around December 5th. Typical, when we launched it, we didn't get a lot of, I mean, everybody liked the idea in Ghana, but no one was really purchasing it. On the 17th of December, between 17th of December, which was getting to Dirty December period, to 22nd of December, that's 5 days, we sold 100 cards. And all of them were from our diaspora community. Everybody traveling in felt like, okay, you know what, I wanted something, I wanted a piece of Black Volta at the location. So essentially what the card did was you just hold the card, you go to Bloomberg, they give you, they make you skip the line. If it's a queue, they make you skip the line. When you go there, you go and spend, they give you 5% discount. You can scan something on the card, which will show you all the events which are happening. We send out a weekly calendar, so it will show you what is happening in a particular week.
That's top notch.
On the 23rd, we had an email from Visa. Visa Global sent us an email and said, this is a brilliant idea. Stop what you're doing. We want to make it a prepaid card. We want to make it into something where you actually can pay. You can load money on it. You can put your bank, and it becomes like an entertainment and lifestyle card for Ghana. We can replicate it to the point where, okay, you know what? When you're coming into Ghana from Delta, maybe we can have a relationship with Delta. They'll give you discounts on it just because you're coming to Ghana.
How did Visa see this? Was it through your connection?
I think through our platform. Okay. So, yeah. So most of the brands just watch. Same thing that you watch. Brands also watch to know what is happening, how they can plug in, what are people drinking, what is consumer spend. And thankfully, this is the card. So this is the card.
That's really cool. Yeah. So you did go through with the Visa relationship.
Yes, I did it with
Congratulations on that, man. Big.
So we partnered with the First Atlantic Bank
and
Visa, and then we are launching it next year.
That's very dope.
So Mutoma has talked about the perception of the monotonous nightlife scene in Accra. And also you've gone into the detail of how maybe cumbersome it becomes to find what's happening. In December, I check out.
You clock out.
Because I'm just not that, and it's not for me. So I don't rate the system based on my perceptions at all, because I'm not the target audience, and it's not my thing, right? But I see that people are into it. The streets are full. People are going to different places. Everybody wants to be a part of something. Everybody wants to be seen. And you mentioned an angle about culturally what maybe nightlife represents for us. So for Black Volta, what particularly do you guys want to maybe elevate the culture to? I.e., see, Dirty December, for a short period, we all assume that it's a Ghanaian thing. Mm. At least for those of us in Ghana. Mm. Obviously, you don't live in Nigeria or anything, so you don't know what their perceptions are. But this past December, it felt like Dirty December had migrated to Nigeria because the eyeballs of the world were seeing the Nigerian experience of December a lot more loudly than it was happening in Ghana. Yeah. And for an organization like yourself, which is tapped in, what is your take on it? Because I'm a lay person, so I could be totally off that December's always been popping in Nigeria, and somehow I just discovered that Dirty December is not really a Ghanaian thing. But that whole thing where it was like, Nigeria's always like, we're battling over Jollof, we're now battling over Dirty December, who's the originator, where does it stand, who gets to bring in the diaspora and dollars and all of that, like, strategically, how are you seeing it? And also from a cultural standpoint, how do you feel about it? Like, did we drop the ball or is there still an opportunity, you know?
So what I want to say on the whole Dirty December conversation is, I believe with how big the entertainment and music economy has grown within Africa, Nigeria will continue to spearhead a lot of things when it comes to entertainment and the party scene. You can't take it away from there. Out of the $3 billion that the creator economy has in Africa, 1.5 of that is in Nigeria.
Wow.
Like 1.5. The funny thing is we don't have data on anything in Ghana. So that brings me to the next question to say, for a very long time when it comes to entertainment and even nightlife, we do not necessarily amplify the things that we do as much. That's one thing. We do not amplify. We don't have that culture of amplification, great stuff. All amplification is around gossip.
Right.
So a lot of things which are happening in Ghana, if you're outside, it's like, okay, who insulted who? Who's dressed what? Who did that? And stuff like that. Dirty December is a big thing for Ghana. We all know it inherently. We just don't have as much media amplification or we don't have as many platforms amplifying it as much. You understand? That's just our drawback when it comes to Ghana. When it comes to experience, people are still going to come. Even with Dirty December, now the shift is that people are going to be going to Nigeria between the 16th to the 20th of December. Right after that, they are in Ghana. That's just how it's going to be.
And what, you know what? I moved back to Ghana 2017 and I saw the early parts of what some of these concerts that were part of the revolution, if you want to call it that, like the the Afro Cellas or Afro Future now, the Afro Nations, it was something like of a boom. But then I was very concerned, maybe wrongly or rightly, but you are the pro, so you probably tell me. It felt like you come to Ghana, you're sold this Dirty December thing, but it felt to me as though it was just nightlife till the morning, sleep, get back to it. But the tourist experience of it is like, what else does Ghana have to offer beyond the quasi nightlife? It's the same tunes. I mean, you know, Burna Boy is hot, Asake is hot. Okay, let's go. Let's pop bottles. Let's do what we do. But what beyond that is our scene doing to hold the attention of the people that set eyeballs on us? And I guess that's part of the question I was asking you, that do you think we did anything to drive away some of that traffic, or is just a natural evolution of the fact that Nigeria is just a bigger market and it has this pulse, like it has a music world by its throat. They're leading the charge, so that's why they're leading. Like, is there something we could have done to embrace that attention a bit better and profited off of it, or at least made it a more worthwhile experience for those coming in?
I think you've just mentioned it. I think we've been great. The festivals, shout out to Afrofuture and Afrochella, formerly Afrochella, they've done amazing. Not just for Ghana, but I mean just for the entertainment scene within Africa. Trying to bring the diasporans back onto the continent is an amazing thing that they've particularly done. I think, as you mentioned, it's just a natural evolution of things. Nigeria has a bigger market, and if you don't have policy frameworks in place, especially from a government standpoint, to actually see tourism as a very big part of your GDP and making reforms around that, it just won't happen. And I think Nigeria has really capitalized on that, especially with their numbers, and it has attracted more brands, right? A lot of brands typically just want to go to Nigeria. Not just because, I mean, I think it's better business, it's a better way to do business in Ghana. I mean, we know how to do business.
Right.
But from a revenue, ease of access type of thing, I think Nigeria just works for them, for the particular, the big brands that understand entertainment.
Right.
And if you're also not a government that's, I mean, every government has their focus points, right? And I think Nigeria, what they've done is they are actively using entertainment to change their narrative.
Right.
Back in the day, like...
They were known as the scammers and fraudsters.
You see what I'm talking about?
They will make your passport.
It's unsafe. It's unsafe. Nigeria is unsafe. We could brand them as scammers and stuff like that. But now when you mention Nigeria, it's the first thing you hear.
Oh, yeah, for beats.
You see what I'm talking about? So I think it's a deliberate attempt by the government to go like, okay, no, let's use the creative industry, the entertainment industry to change the narrative of our country. Mm-hmm. But as opposed to Ghana, where you are still, I mean, your festivals, your people are still begging at the feet of government to actually see the potential of tourism when it comes to Dirty December in their life, it becomes a thing.
Tomo, real quick, maybe you were going to ask that too, but in my mind, I don't want to forget. The follow-up for that is, someone would say the government went out on a limb and did the year of the return, and that was a big thing and all of that. What do you think, as a pro, what do you think, if you were sitting down with policymakers right now, where would you tell them they dropped the ball, and what did they need to put in place when they set up that whole year of return thing? What machination in the background, system in the background, could have supported it to last beyond just a fad?
I think there are a lot of things that could have been done, but I think one very core thing for me is the fact that we don't have a national airline is a big thing. It's like it's a huge thing.
It's
like a huge thing. You understand? So that's where you can have countries like Kenya and Rwanda, who didn't have any blueprints whatsoever. They send their envoys here every single December. I meet with them every single time. They come and find out information on what's popping, how our nightlife scene, how their spend culture is. All of them have airlines. And when they are bringing, they are flying in all these diaspora people that are coming, they give them tax waivers and stuff like that. So very simple things like offering tax. If you know the amount of money it costs for film, they were supposed to shoot, what's the name of this movie? Is it something Girls?
Gossip Girls.
No, something Girls. I've forgotten the name of the
movie. The one that they went on a road trip?
Girls Trip. They were supposed to shoot it here. They couldn't shoot it here because the you know when you are shipping in
equipment,
you have to put in there.
Yeah, tax you. You have to.
There's a huge amount of money that you need to put down. You understand? So there's a lot of investment being happening within film and all those things. But if you do not have the policy frameworks to allow people to come and invest into your particular country, they'll go elsewhere. Idris Elba is now in Botswana. I'm sure they've given him so many tax waivers just to
make it happen.
Yes, make it happen. So mine is, if you're not doing anything for the economy here and someone is also coming and you're also being very strict on the person, I think it's...
I hope that we have a new crop, politics, when it comes to politics, I'm not so much into it. I just speak my mind and go. But we have a new crop of young people who have been placed in certain, you know, positions and offices. And I hope that they really do a great job. They really do a good job, because most of them, or some of them, I know them, you know, one-on-one. Shouts to someone like KOD. You know, he has been in entertainment for a very, very long time. And he's in charge of diaspora affairs, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I hope that, you know, these are some of the conversations that he is going to have with those at the top, the president and whoever. You know, because what he said is, I was going to say, a national airline, right? It will cut everything down.
So it's so expensive to come into the country.
If I'm spending $3,000 already to come to...
Fred, imagine, let's say,
the Ghana government is bringing, who, for lack of a better example, Idris Elba and his team.
Yeah.
There is no national airline, maybe KLM or Air Rwanda or whatever. Mm-hmm. They are going to pay.
Yeah.
Easily. Yeah. If you have your national airline, that is scrapped. That is scrapped. And that money can go into other things. So we might see it as little, but it's a big chunk.
It's a lot. It's a lot. 1 million people coming into your country every December. You have an airline that goes to and from three countries.
I mean, Ghana is going defunct. We all know the story, but
it's crazy.
Yeah.
Charlie, so...
Oh, no, but it not be, that one not be Rollins to do. That one be, be other people.
Yeah. Joey, I want to tap into, you know, your brand more. Mm. Black Volta is, when you hear it, you don't know what it is about. Mm. The first time I heard Black Volta, I thought of some power plant because of the Akwakusumbo, you know, Volta Lake and all that. Mm. Like Black Volta, like it can fit anywhere. Mm. How do you come up with the name and what is the meaning of the name?
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think I mentioned that whilst I was on the journey of documenting my lifestyle, I was putting all this on a particular page. Mm-hmm. And I think I envisioned the fact that this was going to be something. You understand? Yeah. Didn't know what it was.
How? Did you feel it?
I just felt like, you know what? Because you could tell when I started working with 1-2 brands, and I realized a lot of people just need, there's a need for this, right?
Yes.
And I think it was just after COVID, and you know how at that particular time, everybody wanted to throw the name Afro on everything. Afro culture, Afro something, Afrocentric. So I was like, okay, no, I don't want the name of whatever I wanted to start to be mixed up in something which will just leave.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I wanted something which was Ghanaian, African, but at the same time, we could take global. So the black came to mind, right? And I think one day, I was crossing the Adomi Bridge. I was just crossing the Adomi Bridge. And I always say it's an epiphany. I think it was an epiphany. It just hits. Just add Volta to it. So that's when I just joined the two red names, and then it became Black Volta. And then down the line, it's like, yo, how do you come up with some that particular? But I think for me personally, I've also been very good in coming up with names and stuff like that. So I think that's how, but that's how Black Volta started. It was just an epiphany crossing the Volta River, and then we just joined the Black.
So that means close. I was quite close.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you can also say Volta is very much part of the Ghanaian DNA.
Yes.
In terms of identity. Yes. So I love it. I mean, from a branding standpoint, A+ on the name. Look, I won't get political about the conversation at all. I think I'm past those stages, but it's exciting to have someone like you in the space that has global access and building a pedigree where people respect your acumen as opposed to, oh, it's just a wave, right? There's a method to the way that you have done what you have done. And often I've spoken about competency on the podcast as a thing that I care about deeply. I think outside of the world, thanks for not giving us any of those stories. As one day I was raising chickens and then I turned the chicken into an empire and I sold TV to build a billion-dollar industry. Anyway, no shots fired, just saying. To hear you talk about what you do, I want you to maybe go a bit more nerdy into skill set. What, you know, you have an idea. You walk into a space, you're like, there's a need. Mm. But to go back and structure things to the point of, in 2 years, having a 17-employee team, and working across, you know, borders and, you know, even the email from Visa is not something that you take for granted. It's because these companies are also out there fishing and trying to identify with, they're trying to plug in. And if you can be picked out as the plug, that means they've done enough due diligence to recognize that this guy's worth his salt. let's hit him up. So I want you to maybe share with us how you honed your skill set, what you rely on to be the competent leader that you are, and also just how to understand your industry as a whole and how to operate in the spaces that you operate in.
Great question. So I think I mentioned the fact that I'm a chartered HR professional. So I think one of the things that that's really helped me is the fact that I worked within multinational organizations. Mm. I mean, working within GE, I worked with Old Mutual also for a bit. So okay. I think the people that I worked under, especially my bosses and then the corporate culture, really shaped how I particularly do business. Shout out to my team too. My head of strategy and commercialization, he's called Foster Wintiti. He's a brilliant guy. So from a top management level, I make sure that the people who are around me, or I try and surround myself with people who are, I feel like they are more knowledgeable than I am, right? So that gives me that particular drive. I learn from them a lot. Mm. I also read a lot. I follow a lot of podcasts. Mm. Yes, because I have a podcast, I also listen. I listen to you guys a lot. Mm. I really, really listen to you guys a lot, and I pick.
Shout. Yeah,
appreciate that, man.
So I pick on people who are not necessarily just riding a wave, but are really, really thought-provoking in their thoughts, and that's what we actually do. And then in our team, we do a lot of upskilling, right? So it's things like days in a week where the whole team comes together to come and share ideas. We learn new things. What's new? You understand? I had my PA. When we started, I made her jump on the AI wave very, very quickly. Mm. You understand? So always staying ahead of the curve. You need to stay on the bleeding side of technology. That's how I am. Yeah. When it's out, you need to be like, okay, you know what? How are we moving? How are we adapting? How are we adding this to our business model and stuff like that? So it just keeps everybody on their particular toes to actually go like, you know what, people are looking at us and going like, okay, you guys are industry experts or whatever. So you need to really keep that particular level.
Absolutely. Yeah. Appreciate that. Yeah.
So I saw your podcast a while back. Mm. I think your latest guest was D Black.
Yeah.
You know, shouts to what you're doing. Why did you decide to get into podcasting?
So I think documenting nightlife and entertainment has a lot of facets. In as much as we are doing the audio, the visuals. I think creating an archive for the great stories and the people who have really made an impact on the creator economy and the entertainment economy was really great for me. And at the same time, I think we did some research and we realized, to be very honest, nobody's really talking about nightlife. So we are the only nightlife podcasts in Africa. There are entertainment podcasts, right? Talk about music and nightlife and, you know, entertainment is really big, but we wanted to just hone in on just nightlife.
Yeah,
right?
We should enter the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So just, you know what, nightlife. Let's just talk about things like, we talked about drugs, about sex, about alcohol. These kinds of things where, okay, culturally we don't talk about, but there are conversations that necessarily need to happen, you understand? So that's essentially why we started there.
For Nightlife, I have stories for days. Yeah, it's just that now I don't really go out. But yeah, I mean, I go out when need be.
Yeah.
Podcasting, right, from our experience, is quite tough.
Yeah.
Especially if that is your main thing. Mm. But I think podcasting for you is a sub, right? Mm. And when I say it's a sub, like, your visual side is the main thing. That's what, gets our attention.
and the podcast, the audio side is a SAP. Are you on your way to like build a multimedia firm? Is that the plan?
I think we are already there.
You're already there.
We're already there as a media firm. I think what we are trying to do is, because we have our business units, we're not, for me personally, I'm not really big on scaling quickly, right? We have that tendency in Ghana where we start something and then all of a sudden someone wants to have about 10 or 20 or 30 businesses under what they particular do. I really want to really focus on the products and how we execution is very, very important to me, right? In as much as everything just goes on, the execution has to be proper. So I think we've gotten to the point where a lot of the people now see us as a leading digital media firm. So now it's just tapping into the actual, the other skillings across other countries to see whether the business model that we use in Ghana works. If we take it to Uganda, we take it to Kenya, we take it to US, whether it will work or not.
I know you are a ninth kind of guy, like you said at the beginning. That's why you are doing this. But going back to Dirty December, 2024, December, 2024, December, you were everywhere. How exhausting or how easy was it for you? And how were you able to do it?
So I think we have a team.
No, for you,
For me, personally. So
the planning, you being because you were also there. You also had to go out.
So I think that's why I mentioned that I think execution also matters for us, right? So I think planning ahead also helped us, right? I mean, this is our third year doing this particular thing. So we knew, okay, every single year it's going to be 150 events that are going to happen. There are some of them that they want us to come and take content for. Some of them want us to do these kinds of things. And I keep saying that it still feels like play to me. At a point where it feels like work, I always step back. That's how personally I am. If it becomes overly work, I'll step back, or I'll just ask the team that it's not really about a money issue, or you won't 90% of the time you won't see me at places I don't want to go to, right? So it's been it's been very, very easy for me to actually just today like this. This is my second podcast, right?
That's dope.
Yeah, so I'm with my team. We were at the first podcast. We documented that, right? We documented it in such a way. We went to there was a Pulse influencer, there was an influencer event that the team went to capture and all that and stuff like that. So at the end of the day, it's, if you realize, it's just me living my particular life. We've just documented it and then we put it on social media. Once we put it on social media, either a brand or someone sees the value in the storytelling and goes like, we want that for our particular brand. So that's essentially it.
So that means you are making money off this?
Yes.
You've mentioned storytelling a few times. You've spoken about when if you don't like things to feel like work, and I think all three of us on the podcast now, for a large extent, can say that we do what we love so that it feels less like work, even though we're able to earn from it. And I don't know why, but for a large part of my consciousness, I've always been concerned about youth, younger people, and the chronic nature of a lack of mentorship, leadership in our ecosystem. I think there's a new generation of us who are different, who are not afraid to bring the young people along and give them the real blueprint, not some BS about, I went to church and I saw some light. I'm a person of faith. I'm not saying people shouldn't have faith, but I think it's so important to, you know, blaze a trail and keep the doors open. That's how we grow. So to hear you talk about what you do, I mean, just want to say kudos. Shout outs to you. I hope you check off every you know, box that you have marked in your own, you know, mind's eye. But question wise, I feel as though the system could use some tweaking, right? For a guy like myself, my life in America was basically this. I was a workaholic. Mm. I have a day off during the week, and every other weekend I might be off. But typically what I'll do is, I'm a daytime guy. Mm. I want to get up and go to a museum. I want to get up and go see some show somewhere, poetry. There's this place called Buzz Boys and Poets.
Charles.
Yeah, you could just go kick it and not do too much.
Yeah.
There's an element to the popping of the bottles, which is great, but it's also another type of guy who just wants to have a cool conversation with a nice girl somewhere. But I don't want it to be too focused on the conversation. What do you think we're lacking in that, or are there places that maybe I'm not aware of because I'm not plugged in, that you would say, oh, you know, these are the things you should check out during the daytime. Mm. It has an entertainment value. It's not just go out and eat, because restaurants pop up and die like nobody's business in this town. Daytime entertainment. I know you're a nightlife guy, but entertainment in general. If I'm coming into the country, I want to live a normal life. What else is happening, or what else could be happening that you don't think we're taking advantage of?
I think there are a couple of things that we're not taking advantage of. I think there's a big focus now in the world on coffee parties. Like daytime, not even like in the brunches I'm talking about. I mean, brunches in Ghana, you guys have bastardized that word. But yes, brunch culture, I think things in the daytime. I like this Accra Art District place. I think they are trying to bring a particular movement where people can do painting and sculpturing and batik making and all these things that we can potentially do within the daytime. But to answer your first question, I feel like a lot more people should find entertainment attractive. Right? That's the first thing. And we need a lot more like-minded people like you who are doing cool stuff to be very, very active within the entertainment industry. You get what I'm saying? So let me give you a typical example. Like, the Ghana music industry, everybody keeps talking about it. I like the new wave of people who are coming into the Ghanaian music scene. Like your Amarés, your Mollies,
They're kicking some ass. Eh?
Yeah, you get what I'm saying. So
I just checked out Molly because you mentioned last time.
You get it. So these people that are coming into like the entertainment space are coming from a place of, we have fresh ideas, we've traveled the world, we are very exposed, and we have a different worldview altogether. If we had a lot more people within the entertainment space, it would open up some of these things. Mm. Look at the skate park thing. Would you ever think Ghanaian would open a skate park?
Yeah.
What kind of education, what kind of exposure do you need to have, you understand, to open a skate park at Afrikiko in the daytime? So mine is, I feel the ideas are there, but people should like just feel like entertainment is something that they can make money off. It's a business. It's something that you can like actually quit your 9-to-5 to actually do and make money out of. And then we can have all these fresh ideas that come and all these dope places that we can have people party in the daytime.
Sweet.
Like that.
Sweet.
Dope. Yeah. My last question to you, and I asked it earlier, but I think you forgot to answer. Is Black Volta going to have their own events?
So we have about 6 signature events. We have 6 signature events. I think 3 of them are parties.
Yeah.
One of them is end of year party. It's called Blackout. It happens every year on the 26th of December.
Oh, okay. So you guys have your
yes, we have our own events. So Black Water Events is a separate, it's a business unit under Black Water. We have a weekly event at Mood Bar called 7 Wednesdays.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
Yes. We have a Slow Jams event, which is focused on neo soul, R&B, hip-hop, old hip-hop. Yeah. It's at Excel every Friday. And then we have the Black Water Creator Mix.
Yeah.
Right? So after curating 180 events last year, I was like, okay, you know, people need to travel into the country. I think you mentioned it. And it's not just about the party. How about we create an ecosystem for people to connect with creatives. Mm. So instead of, I have a Black Water Creator Mix. It happens every quarter.
Yeah.
But thankfully this year I've partnered with, Black Water has partnered with two other brands. This same problem that we had, I was like, you know what, I want us to have a holistic approach to it. So we are launching something called Entertainment Week Ghana, which is happening neck deep when all the diasporans are here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a three-day event. It's a two-day event. The first day is a panel discussion about 400 individuals, and it's different. Sometimes when you go to panel discussions, you have on the panel, you have corporates sitting on the panel speaking to individuals, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This time around, I want brilliant or people who are creatives who have done amazing stuff within Ghana. You, the corporates, come and sit down and come and listen to them.
Yeah.
You understand? Let them tell you their problems. Let them tell you how they bootstrapped. How, let them tell you that kind of thing.
So you guys,
so you have your dev jam.
You guys flip the coin.
Where you have your dev jam, have your Spotify, have your YouTube. But let them sit down. And let brilliant Ghanaian creatives sit on the panel and tell you what they are.
Who are doing it the hardcore?
Yes, the hardcore way. Let's tell you what are how our culture informs. That. So that's the first day. The second day is an award scheme.
Mm.
It's called the Novas.
Yeah.
It's more around the marginalized people, not necessarily marginalized, but people that necessarily are not.
Celebrated
well enough, you understand? So you have your visual storytellers, your filmmakers. You have Ghana, all you have is Ghana Music Awards.
Yeah.
Mm. So how about your dope, like, podcasting?
Yeah.
You understand? And at the same time, I think with that, the angle with the Novas is we want to be able to churn out real influencers.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
When I ask you right now, who is a movie icon of Ghana?
Movie icon.
We should have that one person that we can take globally
and
say, this is our entertainment person of the year.
Mm.
This is our movie person of the year.
Mm.
This is our, you get what I'm saying? Some people that we amplify here that we can take globally.
Yeah.
We don't have those kinds of people, you understand?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the Novus. And then the third one that we are adding to the panel discussion is called what we call the deal room. So we have brilliant creatives within that entertainment ecosystem. If you've seen across Africa, there are VCs, venture capital firms that are investing actively in the creative economy now. People are spending like $2 million, $1 million investing in businesses. I just saw Ryan Reynolds. I just read that Ryan Reynolds has invested a huge chunk of money in some entertainment business whatsoever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So having Ghanaian creatives pitch into what we call the deal room, and having venture capital firms coming in and say, go, like, you know, we want to invest in your particular business. People are running their businesses, some of them haven't even registered their business.
Yeah.
They haven't registered their business, they don't have tax certificates. Then you say no one is funding you, but the funding money is there. You understand? So how do you just structure yourself so that someone somewhere will go, like, okay, no, I'll give you $1 million to fund your whole production. You understand? So those are things we are coming about in Entertainment Week Ghana. Cool. That's one of our.
So
that's dope.
I get to ask a last question.
Yep.
It's not the most interesting question, but I think it's a necessary question.
Yeah.
A lot of times I'm socially conscious and aware of what's going about. And you know when development is happening to an underdeveloped country like ours.
Mm.
There's always the voices in the background who feel marginalized or underappreciated or overlooked or sidelined or discounted or completely left out. And a lot of times in December, you hear the noise on social media. These people come and disrupt our lives. These people come and make everything so expensive. These people are this, these people are that. Fuck them, we don't care, blah, blah, blah. If you've heard those things, how do we, is it possible? Because I'm a capitalist at heart. Like, I don't want to play no socialist game, but is there an angle where we can take advantage of a merger rather than a separation? Like, do you think about it? Has it crossed your radar of how to integrate people into, you know, there's certain experiences, like you go to Dominican Republic, for instance, you have to ingratiate yourself into the culture.
Mm.
You go to Jamaica, you go to other places in the world, Brazil. the culture feels like you have to integrate locally for you to have a proper experience. From your vantage point, is that possible? Is that something that's given consideration, and do you think it's worth it?
You mean the fact that people come in and go like, okay, you know what, these people are making everything expensive.
So the locals, let me make it more simple. Sometimes I'm too wordy. The locals feel like they can't actively participate in Dirty December.
Okay.
And then the foreigners too are here to have a good time. They're not here to solve your political issues that you have with your government, right? It's a fucking idiotic, you know, position to take to ask somebody who's here to chill that, but we don't have drinking water in Nima. I don't give a fuck about that. But how do you make it so that the two elements can maybe feel like they're working with each other? We are one people. We are from different economic stations in life, but we all bleed. We all have the same fears, the same aspirations, goals, dreams, all of that. Instead of there being a divide, is there a thought process of there can be some continuity, some connectivity, some integration?
I think you just mentioned that. I think, as I mentioned, I think what we are trying to do with Entertainment Week Ghana is just one of them. I think also, I keep getting back to the fact that I don't like this idea of us solving the big problems. Government just has to create that particular avenue where there's that synergy, you understand, within Dirty December. It's just not, you have 1 million people coming into the country. They are coming into the country to come and learn a culture, be embedded into a particular culture. If you have one of your big exports as music, how do you tailor your music such that these people who are coming in feel like they are a part of the actual ecosystem? What kind of initiatives are we putting together? You understand? What kind of collaborations are we actually putting together? But if those things are just not there, you understand, everybody would just feel like, because most of the events that we go for, you realize that people come into the country and then the foreigners have their own events that they go to. Ghanaians also have their own events that they actually go to, which shouldn't be the case whatsoever. Someone can have, last year we had, I think around 23rd December, Ara the J had a concert at Alliance Francaise. Alliance Francaise is an amazing place to actually showcase Ghanaian talent. Anytime events go there, you realize that Ara the J's concert, it was only Ghanaians that went to that particular event. If you go for another event, you go like, oh, you know, foreigners that go to that particular. So that there's that divide. So unless we go, like, sit back and then we go like, okay, no, let's be very intentional about creating events or frameworks where that integration actually goes on, it will still continue.
One of the main causes of that is ticket prices.
Do we have a ticket culture? Do you think we should adopt a ticket culture in Ghana?
Fred, do you think we should adopt a ticket culture?
As in sell tickets for cheap or tickets in general?
Tickets in general.
I mean, don't we have that? The concerts and stuff is usually for the diaspora people.
Yeah, in December, it's mainly... and tickets are sold in even USD.
Affordability is a big thing.
Yeah.
But I've always thought about Ghana on scale, that the majority of the people, that's where the wealth is. It seems to me as though we are all focused on the minority of the diaspora and the foreign market, but... I'm in real estate, right? And a lot of times what I see is sky-high, ridiculous prices in December. And those people are empty for 80% of the rest of the year. Yeah. It's not smart business. So in a long roundabout way of answering the question Mutombo asked me, do I think we should have a ticket culture? I think we should have more reasonable, like, business people who understand that business is not just making a large unreasonable profit because you're gouging people and then the rest of the year you are redundant. That's not business. That's just you're a fucking con man or a deal maker or whatever. But if this the entertainment industry can find a way to
be sustainable.
Sustainable and generate enough so that we can afford to, we can't tell Sakodia to drop his rates. We can't tell Shatawali to drop his rates. What we can do is make it a bigger audience so the revenue is bigger so everybody can get a bigger piece of the bigger pie. as opposed to a small pie where everybody's trying to.
Yeah, but I feel it is automatic. If Shatta Wale is having a concert and or Sarkodie is having a concert and the ticket prices are okay, I think there'll be a crowd.
Yeah, you see, but my so Shatta, they do concert for Accra Sports Stadium. I they feel Shatta, but I no go go Accra Sports Stadium. The parking be yawa, the drinks and things go there, there go be baller. Somebody go break my mirror, then I go ball. So you have to bring Shatta maybe in between a place where it's everybody. I mean, I think Elwak is a great space, but you know, they keep raising their price because they think people are making too much money. Anyway, I don't want to overtalk, but I'm just saying that, Charlie, we forfeit to vibe together. Yeah. We'll be one people, you know. The separation sometimes causes problems.
Yeah. And Charlie, shout out to Joey!
Yeah. We are
Charlie, in the last few episodes, like season 6 has been packed with dope episodes. Like, you know, everybody who comes, you know, in comes with, you know, a different vibe, different, you know, brain. And Charlie, Joey, Black Volta, we thank you for coming through
thank
the
you
podcast.
So
thank you guys for follow Black Volta, the Black Volta, right?
No, just Black Volta.
Okay, sorry, Black Volta. B-L-A-C-V-O-L-T-A. You guys have to follow.
Hi, you're the first person. You're amazing.
No, me the page there. I follow. I'm Charlie. So you guys for follow Black Volta. They are on Instagram. That's where I, you know, follow. And I think you're on TikTok too.
Everywhere.
Yeah, basically everywhere, but Charlie. Yeah, then be vibe. You just check them out. And I'm sure you've heard all what Joey has, you know, fed you guys on this episode. Fred, what is your take home? 300 Ghana cedis.
Yo, Joey, what I want to say to you is this is one of the episodes in a very long time I didn't prepare for. I walked in black.
Same.
You could see Donald briefing me a little bit.
Same.
But your energy is infectious. Yeah. I think you come with an openness and the kind of energy that allows people to just have a regular conversation. Mm. And for me, starting this podcast was about that.
Yeah.
Sincere, dope conversations that were not too curated, like, you know, prepared. Like, hey, we for business question, then pass it and take this angle. Yeah. But if anyone is paying attention, there's a lot of wealth that you shared, and shout outs to you. I wish you the best.
I basically, after we started, I sent Donald a text. No, before we are about to start, what is his full name?
Yeah.
Right? That's why I asked you, should I introduce you by your full name so that I can actually, what's your surname? Then I can, you know, same thing. You know, I know Black Volta like from your beginning, but I didn't know. Even though I knew you, I didn't know, like, the brain behind, like, what is Black Volta, like, aside entertainment. But Charlie, you guys feed we, you know, with dope content, and you have come on this podcast to also feed us with whatever you guys, the Visa thing is dope. Yeah. It's really, really dope, like, and that means you guys are onto something.
Yeah.
Yeah, Charlie. And Chai, with that, shout out to Atunu Adeketao for powering this season. I was going to say episode. Yeah, but they've been powering every episode in 6 and 6. So shout out to Atunu Adeketao. Shout out to the IMLD team. Shout out to everybody, the subscribers, the followers, and all those who have been telling an uncle to tell an auntie to tell a grandmother about the podcast, the If More, Let's Divide podcast. Fred.
Yes, sir.
We are through. Yo, it was a fire episode. Yes,
this is the If More, Let's Divide podcast.